News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great Saturday. Hope we can make it even just a little bit better. Maybe cool you off a little bit by talking to you about everything that's hot in entertainment and pop culture. Because it is mighty hot outside, although not as hot here as it is in the Midwest and the north part of the country, which is weird.
I heard it almost hit 80 degrees over in the UK, so they're experiencing some extreme weather as well.
Yeah, for sure. So joining me to discuss the weather and everything else that's going on, please welcome from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
A surprise! Oh man, I jumped in a little bit early, didn't I?
It's all good.
Thanks for having me, man. I always love to be here. We try to catch people up with everything going on in the world of pop culture, but there's a lot going on these days. And the couple things that we're going to be talking about on today's show, I know, are things that both you and I are super excited about. But we haven't talked live in a couple of weeks now, and I wanted to see about your temperature on two different things that are pretty significant in the world of pop culture. And I know to you as well, have you watched any, have you watched any of The Acolyte? And then B, how is the new Doctor Who series going?
I have not watched The Acolyte yet. I'm planning to sit down with that hopefully this weekend and get caught up. And I think we'll definitely be talking about that on the show in the future. Doctor Who is coming up on the, by the time this is on air, the season finale will have aired because it's coming up. We're talking a little early, but Friday evening. So by the time this airs on Saturday, I will have seen it, but I have not seen it yet. But a great season so far, man.
Good.
Yeah, and the penultimate episode was just full of, like, brain explosions. So I'm really very much looking forward to, I'd love to talk about the full season next week on the show if you're interested.
Not a chance. I will be caught up. I would love to talk to you about it. My God, it's been so hard to keep up lately. I really am so stoked to always be a part of the show. I love to be able to talk about the things that we're both catching. It's been tough, though, lately. I've been extremely busy, and that means that I've been in the dark about some pretty significant things. One of these is that I just now found out that Kevin Costner is kind of diving back into the Western, event movie thing. There's this new movie coming out called Horizon, An American Saga, Chapter 1. And I'd never heard of this. I was like, wow, a three-hour movie? And then come to find out, you told me this is like one of four movies.
Yeah, Costner's making four of these. I guess two of them are already done, and they're already into shooting the third one, I believe. But yeah, I'm having trouble figuring out why this is a theatrical thing. Like, why
Talk
this
to me.
Is?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, like, this kind of project to span this many hours and for, you know, three hour movies, and there's four of them. You're talking, all right, that's 12 hours of film. How's that not, you know, a Netflix original or a Max original or, you know?
Let's be real. This is a Paramount Plus series that some people are going to be hardcore about, and most people, I don't know, like, it reminds me of what was that one Western that came out that was like a big hit, but I don't think either of us.
Well, you're talking about Yellowstone, which Costner was on, and he blew that up to go make this. Like, they just came out in the last like 24 hours or so that he's not going to come back for the end of Yellowstone.
And people like that.
And he was the main character. No, it was a huge hit. And he like helped to repopularize the Western, and now he's like, you know, now he's ticked off all the fans. So he's ticked off all the fans in time to come out with these four movies that you got to go out and pay money in the theater to see.
Do you think they just thought that Kevin Costner's name was too big to fail? Let's just go ahead and shoot four movies before we even see how the first one did. Like, what is the logic behind this? He put his own money on the line?
I mean, yeah, he did. He put his own money on the line with this.
Crazy.
So it's like, like Coppola has done with Megalopolis, which we're finally going to get to see later this year. But except four movies, I mean, dude's got a lot of money and a lot of clout. Don't get me wrong. And it could be great. I mean, he's certainly made great movies before. He's directing these as well as starring in them. And I believe he wrote or co-wrote them too. I'm not 100% on that. But I don't know, man. Maybe like right after Dances with Wolves, this might have been a good idea. But now?
Yeah. It's like Zack Snyder with the Scargiver and whatever Rebel Moon series, where they just go all in on these projects. Rennie Harlan recently did it with The Strangers. And it's like, if the first one comes out and it isn't a critical and audience success, like people don't really like it, then what do you do? How do you bounce back from that? They did it with The Exorcist. I mean, there's countless examples of this.
Well, in The Exorcist, they just completely scrapped the plan.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah, they're still making another Exorcist movie because they paid too much money for the rights, but they're not going forth with the plan that that they had. And in fact, they're going forth with who's the guy that did all of the super popular Netflix horror series?
Mike Flanagan.
Yeah, Mike Flanagan. So Mike Flanagan's making the next Exorcist movie now.
Good pick.
Yeah. So they completely, you know, they had this three-movie plan that Exorcist Believer was supposed to be the launch of, and then that came out, and it did okay business if you hadn't paid $400 million for the rights to the franchise.
Insane.
So, yeah, they've scrapped that plan and they're going forth with a different plan. And there's been some examples of things like that too. You know, the Universal dark universe, where they were going to go forth and they had this big plan to have this interconnected universe with all the Universal Monsters characters.
And the hugest stars you could possibly think of. And they even came together for a photo shoot and then just vanished.
Yeah. Because they made that Tom Cruise mummy movie that was terrible. And made no money, and it wasn't really a mummy movie. It was a Tom Cruise action movie that happened to have a mummy in it.
Yeah. Sophia Boutella just can't catch a break when it comes to franchises that really take off and showcase her abilities, because I think she's great, but man, she's had a tough run at the franchises.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair to say, but yeah, I mean, that whole, and now we are going to see, there is going to be a dark universe, but it's not going to be a movie. It's going to be a theme park.
I'm here for that. From what I saw of it and what you and I discussed, it sounds kind of awesome.
I'm super stoked for that. So this is going to be part of the upcoming third park that they're building at Universal Studios Florida. They're one of the worlds within that park will be Dark Universe, and they did release some of the information about the rides and attractions for that section of the park this week. And man, it looks great.
Yeah.
I'm super excited because I do love those Universal Monsters characters, and I'm game for doing something interesting. We've got some interesting stuff coming in the theaters with those characters as well. You know, Guillermo del Toro is working on a Frankenstein film, and looking really very much forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're getting another run at the Wolfman, if I'm not mistaken. And then, of course, we've got the Robert Eggers Nosferatu movie, which is basically a Dracula movie. It's definitely a vampire movie.
I got high hopes for that one.
Yeah, although not all these are necessarily under the Universal banner, because all those characters are public domain, and there's something special about the Universal banner with these characters, because it goes back to Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff and, you know, the Giants,
Lon
Chaney.
Yeah,
you know, so I would like to see Universal Monsters as a film franchise. Dark Universe maybe wasn't the way to go about it. Although I, interestingly enough, I think that Tom Cruise mummy movie, the best stuff in that movie was the world building stuff. You know, there was a plan for Dr. Jekyll to be the Nick Fury character of that universe, and Russell Crowe was playing him. And I liked all of that stuff. It was the rest of the movie that didn't click. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And, you know, Jeremy, I remember back when we were kids, used to be like the summer was the time when, like, there was nothing on TV. Like, it was all reruns and there was mm-hmm. nothing to watch. Man, that is not the case anymore. We are in an era where, like, all the good shows are on TV right now.
Yeah.
As evidence of that, we're going to talk about The Boys a little later. We just talked about Doctor Who very briefly. We've got Star Trek Prodigy getting ready to come back on Netflix in the next little bit here. And perhaps more than any other show, House of the Dragon just came back on HBO and Max. And we've been waiting for season two of this for, it seems like, about 1,200 years.
It does.
It's not quite as long as we've been waiting for George R.R. Martin to finish the actual Game of Thrones book series.
No.
Because that's just never going to happen, basically. Mm-hmm. But still, it's been, how long has it been since the final episode of season one?
Oh, geez. I don't know. I feel like it was sometime in 2021, but I'm not positive. I know you and I talked about the whole season, so it's not been longer than that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's been a minute. You know,
yes, it has.
It's been more than a minute, it's fair to say. To the extent that, I got to be honest, in watching this first new episode, which debuted on Sunday, it took me a minute. Like, even with the recap, like, any character that wasn't, like, one of the main characters, it's like, all right, who's this dude again?
I think that's totally reasonable. So what the first season did very ambitiously and maybe to varying degrees of success is cover a really long time span all within the 8 or 10 episodes that the first season was, and it did a good job. But I don't think what you said is unique to you, because there are so many characters in this series, and I don't ever advocate that a show is something that you should have to, like, consume supplemental material to be able to enjoy on a, like, cinema and television shows, they're like a sensory experience. So you should be able to enjoy them as they are on their own. But House of the Dragon is one that I constantly have to refer back to the source material and be like, wait, who is this character? What is this character's name? Because there's so many of them. So I think that's, a reasonable observation. I got to ask you, what do you think about the new opening credit sequence?
I thought that was really interesting, because I do think this is one of the few things that we've seen. I mentioned to Jeremy off the air that a few times over the last week or so, when talking about this series, I've screwed up and called it Game of Thrones. And then realized, yeah. No, I mean House of the Dragon. There has been this thing with, especially with the first season, where it seemed like they really wanted to make you think you were still watching Game of Thrones. They're still using the same theme song that they used on Game of Thrones, and they are still in this season using that theme song as well. But the opening credits in season one were very much in that same style of the opening credits of House of the Game of Thrones, where you had those 3D models and, you know, everything was laid out about this across this big map of Westeros. And they've switched this season to a tapestry. And I really liked it.
Yeah, it kind of tells the Targaryen lineage and kind of the history all the way up until events that happened in the previous season. I think it's cool. I am a bit of a creature of habit where I'm not like, oh, this is better than the previous one, but I do appreciate what it's doing, and I think it's doing a better job of illustrating the important historical touchstones that happened throughout the Targaryen dynasty.
I think, you know, the other thing that I would add about that is that you could make an argument that this is a war within a family.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
To have it all spread across one tapestry. A tapestry is one piece.
I like that.
Yeah, so I kind of like that too. And yeah, you've got characters in here that come from other families, but in the base, this is all, you know, the heirs of Viserys Targaryen.
Yeah.
Who, of course, was the character that, you know, was the leader through most of last season and then passed. And the misinterpretation of his dying words is what has led to all of this tragedy, basically.
So before we get to the big blood and cheese ending, which I think is what a lot of people are talking about, we should let everybody know that we're going to kind of dive into spoilers that are happening in this series. But to your point about kind of feeling, still feeling so connected to Game of Thrones, what did you think about starting the episode off in Winterfell and getting that familiar Stark theme and going and visiting the wall? Was that doing it for you, or did you feel like it was just try hard or what?
No, I really liked that, actually. I was very pleased to see that. I think it's not a bad thing to remind us that we're in the same world.
No, I mean, it's one of the greatest shows of all time. I guess if I had a criticism, it would be like that foreboding Stark House saying of winter is coming. It used to have so much weight and mystery to it. And I know you and I feel slightly different on season 8. You are not as negative on it as I was, but I feel like the whole legend of the Night King and this impending doom is really undermined by it. So when you said winter is coming, I couldn't help but just be like, yeah, but like that's not near as devastating probably as 15 dragons destroying freaking Westeros in this Targaryen civil war that's about to go down.
Well, I mean, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, obviously we're going to watch all of that go down. So
do you want to talk about the last scene?
I mean, so this entire episode is very dark. Not that darkness in the Game of Thrones world is any surprise. Yeah, the series has been very dark from the beginning. But I got to say, you know, most of this episode is the repercussions of what happened at the end of last season, which I did look, final episode of last season aired October 23rd of 2022. So
okay.
Pretty close to 2 years ago. So if you don't remember, you had, one of the cousins kill one of the other cousins.
Luke, which is Rhaenyra's, middle son, was killed by Aemon, which is, Alicent's younger son, and they were on a little dragon battle thing heading away from House Baratheon's castle, and things got out of control, and Aemon's dragon essentially mistakenly ate Luke's and his dragon. But like you said, Rhaenyra's spiraling in grief. The Hightowers are in King's Landing kind of plotting how they're going to move forward, knowing that there's an impending battle looming. And Daemon takes it upon himself to hire a couple of people from King's Landing to go on an assassination mission to kill Aemon Targaryen. And it doesn't play out exactly like that, does it?
It does not. And that's the thing. Like, all of this comes down to maybe Daemon shouldn't have trusted these guys to do the job.
Idiots.
Yeah, these are not the brightest... the brightest bulbs in the Westeros chandelier, so to speak.
Because they're exterminators, they have the keys to the kingdom. They can just roam around through the Red Keep and nobody even bat an eye at them. So in a way, they're the perfect people, but they don't find Aemon.
They couldn't be trusted to do the job right. They just decided that any son was good enough if you want a son for a son. And that was clearly not Daemon's intention.
Okay, so
whatever else you can say about Daemon, Daemon's not a great guy, don't get me wrong, but whatever else you can say about him, I don't think it was his intention to do what ended up being done here.
We're in the realm of speculation. The incident is referred to as Blood and Cheese in the books, and these two assassins, they're not able to find Aemon, but they do find the two children of, what's
of,
the name?
Of King Aegon II.
Correct.
The king who has been crowned in Rhaenyra's place, who is by no means in any way prepared to handle this role or competent.
He's so funny in this episode.
Yeah. They basically they kill one of his children, his heir, his male child.
They make the mother, Helena, give up which one it is, and she does. She tells them which one the boy is. They murder it. You hear a slow beheading off camera. It's pretty, like you said, dark is a really good word for it. And that's where the episode ends. So, yeah, this son for a son kind of debt has been paid, but not in the way they expected it to. And you kind of just now mentioned what you thought Daemon would do in this situation. We're totally in the realm of speculating here, but if they did not find Aemon, what do you think Daemon would have told them to do?
I don't know, but I definitely don't think that Rhaenyra is going to be very happy with this.
No, clearly not.
And I think that this is now got us to the point where it can be nothing but war, which, yeah, I mean, was always what was going to happen. But it's such a grim and dark way for it to happen. And it's, you're not going to feel good after. This is not the feel good viewing episode of the year by any stretch of the imagination. It's just seeing that happen to an innocent child. It's pretty much the most shocking thing that's happened in Game of Thrones since the end of the first episode of the series when Jaime Lannister threw Bran out the window.
Yeah.
We've got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Knowledge Channel on YouTube, and we're going to move from the kings and queens of Westeros now to maybe a slightly less royal world, but nonetheless a world of much political intrigue, and that is, of course, the world of The Boys on Amazon Prime. So it feels weird to say this, Jeremy, but we just had the debut of season 4 of The Boys, and we're already at the mid-season.
Yeah, and that seemed really weird to me until you reminded me this isn't the first time they did that.
No, in fact, every season of The Boys and the spinoff Gen V, they've released the first 3 episodes simultaneously, and then weekly thereafter. But they do basically 8-episode seasons, so that means 2 weeks in, you're halfway through the season, which is...
And I don't want to get too hung up on it because we have a lot to talk about, but you and I have discussed release schedules in regards to the way maybe they do it at Disney Plus versus the way they do it at Amazon and Netflix and so on, and I feel like The Boys in particular is such a standout and a hit series that it seems like just for the sake of retention and keeping it in the zeitgeist, it would make sense to milk it and put it out once every week, because then you've got at least 2 months worth of subscriptions instead of somebody just being able to hop in at the last minute and catch it all in 1 month.
I think that The Boys, though, is such a dense storytelling that it would be hard to get enough into that first episode to make sure that people are hooked.
Explain that a little bit better. I think I know where you're heading with that, but like, you need more than what one episode can provide to make sure people are invested for the upcoming season.
I think so, especially when you have a series that tends to introduce new characters each season, even though there's still kind of these core characters that we continue to follow. There are new characters that come in that are very important. I mean, think about, just as an example, this new character that we've been introduced to in this season, Sister Sage, and how central she is already. Like, can you imagine this season of The Boys without Sister Sage at this point?
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, even on another and maybe less severe, but well, no, I'd say it's equally as important as Firecracker, who ended up being one of my favorite characters from the series so far. That is a really funny send-up to things that are going on right now. And you and I talked very briefly before we started recording, and there's a time and a place for political discussion, and you and I don't like to wade too deeply into those waters for obvious reasons. We don't want to exclude anybody, and we think that, you know, what our commonality is a love for pop culture. With a series like The Boys, it is so integral to the themes and even explicitly the story that it's going to be hard to navigate that without touching on some political stuff. So just wanted to give everybody kind of a trigger warning, if you will, about that.
Yeah, I mean, you really cannot. This series has been political from the start, and if you were paying attention, it shouldn't be a surprise to you the politics that are being expressed in this show. But I find that there's this weird thing where a lot of people watch stuff without really watching it, and I'm not just applying that to The Boys.
Homelander's the good guy thing, but I've never actually talked to anybody that thinks Homelander's the good guy.
I mean, I have seen some people cosplay Homelander that I think are very confused. especially considering I've seen like African American Homelander cosplayers. And it's like,
yeah, you also see people cosplay as Leatherface.
Well, yeah, but that's a little bit different. And to a further extent, like I always kind of wonder about people who choose to cosplay Starlight, and depending on which costume they choose, because Starlight has had two costumes throughout the course of the series. You had the one that she created that was, you know, kind of demure. It's got a little longer skirt, and is that character how she sees herself. And then there's the costume that Vought put her in, which is much scantier. And it shows a lot more flesh and looks a lot more. It appeals to more basic interests.
Sure.
Let's put it that way. And I always kind of wonder when I see people cosplaying that character, to the extent that I usually, if I see somebody wearing the more demure costume, I will say something to them about the cosplay, saying, I always appreciate when I see people wearing that costume, because the people wearing that costume are the ones that actually get this character.
And then you call the other ones whores, right?
No, I absolutely do not. But I do think that if you're going out wearing that costume, you've missed the point of that character. Like the whole point of cosplay is that something about the character speaks to you, and that
explain we're so far off in the freaking woods. Explain the Friday the 13th Jason Voorhees then.
I mean, I still think that there's something about that character or that franchise that speaks to you, but I don't think it necessarily means that you want to be a murderer. And I'm not saying that the people that choose the scantier Starlight cosplay want to be pawns of a major corporation, but you had two choices to play that character. There's not two.
All right, whatever. Let's move on.
There's not two choices to play Jason. Well, I mean, there kind of are, because there's variations in the various Friday the 13th movies, but when you're talking about this character, it's like, all right, if you identify with this character, you want to be the version of that character that she wants to be. If you're wearing costume,
I get what you're versus saying. I'm giving you a hard time, but I understand.
Well, but you know, and I'm not, everybody can wear whatever cosplay they want to. I want to be clear about that. But I think in this particular case, with there being the two costumes and what those two costumes represent, to me, if you're choosing the scantier costume, there are two reasons for that. Either you don't get the character, or you just want to show off more of your body. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, that if that's what you want to do, knock yourself out. That's awesome. But to me, in a way that I don't feel this about, really. I can't think of any other character I feel this about. Like, I mean, there are Wonder Woman costumes that are scantier than others, and I don't feel that way about Wonder Woman because it's never been presented in the context of someone is making her wear this costume.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And that's the thing with Starlight, that costume is a costume she was forced into. And it kind of goes against the whole nature of this character, especially the way this character has developed over now 3.5 seasons of The Boys, because we're halfway through the fourth season, to where she has developed into trying to be this leading voice for having your own voice and being your own person. And you get where I'm going? Like I do.
No,
so, I mean,
I
that's
totally...
one of the ways in that I think that there are some people that to bring this back around to the point, which was not about Starlight or Homelander. It's about the way that people have consumed this series and the way people have chosen to identify with certain characters maybe makes me think that they haven't been watching it that closely or paying that close of attention. And there's this whole thing going around now where it's like, oh, you just... Your politics are to this side and you've just now figured out that The Boys are making fun of you.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, you've just now figured out that Star Trek is quote unquote woke. Star Trek has been woke since 1967.
Right.
You know, I mean, or 64 or whatever year it was that Star Trek debuted. I'm probably getting it wrong. You know, it's the X-Men are woke now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same kind of thing. If you don't see that, you didn't get this show to begin with. You didn't get these characters to begin with. So, yes, it has become more overtly political, and the parallels to modern-day American politics have become inextricable at this point.
Do you think that's to the show's benefit? In season 4 specifically, which is what we're talking about, because I agree, it went from being... observable and understandable as a subtext to now it's like, hey, you remember that thing that happened in the news? We're going to parody that exact scene. And I feel like sometimes it's kind of dipping into the waters of those like scary movie type things where it's like, hey, remember this thing? We're doing that thing. And I feel like sometimes that may be a little too on the nose.
I remains to be seen where the rest of the season goes, but right now I'm on board with it. I do think,
I do think that
this show, while it definitely has a more left-leaning worldview, is not afraid to take on the left when it needs to as well.
I feel like it should be taking a little bit heavier shots at just the current. It's doing it in an interesting way, though, right? Because you mentioned this new character. What's her name?
Sister Sage.
Sister Sage, a black woman. And in a way, and up to this point, which we've only seen half the season, but she seems to be very aware of the way that culture can be manipulated and is using it to kind of galvanize this left versus right kind of narrative through some very clever marketing, same with Firecracker. Yes. And they're really capitalizing on that. And I think the fact that it is a black woman kind of adds a dimension to it that kind of allows them to escape culpability in some kind of more abstract way. And I appreciate that they're kind of digging a little deeper into maybe the powers that be aren't necessarily on one side or the other, but really just pursuing their self-interests. And on the other hand, I feel like it's really just shot after shot at right-wing politics right now, and that may not help it to age well in a way that people always see it as the kind of classic superhero satire that it could be.
Well, let's talk more about that after the break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Love lifts us up where we belong, where the eagles cry on a mountain high. Love lifts us up where we belong, far from hang on to who used to be. Live their lives looking behind.
All hell is here and now. All our lives are
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jerry Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. We won't subject you to too much of that.
Beautiful.
So that was in the course of the fourth episode of The Boys, we were treated, that's in air quotes if you couldn't tell, to a cover of the classic song Up Where We Belong from the movie An Officer and a Gentleman, covered by two of the characters from The Seven, Firecracker and The Deep. And yeah, it's not good. but that's
their relationship is funny, but I'm really liking what they're doing with Sister Sage and The Deep in this season.
Yeah, that's one of the creepier elements for sure. So Sister Sage is supposed to be the smartest person in the world. And that's her power. She is a soup that she was, you know, she has, you know, compound B, and that's what it did to her. It made her super intelligent. And to the point that the only way she can turn it off is to basically give herself a lobotomy, and then her brain grows back, but she can turn it off for a couple of hours. And I get that, you know, it's kind of an analogy for the way, like, you see a lot of very smart people resort to alcohol and drugs.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, it, and you wonder how, if they're so smart, they can do that. It's because the only way they can turn it off and just, you know, turn their brain off for a while. So this is that same kind of situation. And she's doing this, and at the same time, it makes her able to tolerate The Deep, who she finds attractive, but also incredibly stupid. Because he is. As we know over the course of 3.5 seasons of the show, The Deep is not the deepest person in the world.
No. So Homelander essentially is just tired of being surrounded by yes men and sycophants, and he wants somebody that can actually challenge him and give pushback when what he's doing is just clearly not the right move. So he goes and he acquires Sister Sage, and he adds her to The Seven. And just real quick on her, it's such a kind of a nihilistic show to depict the world's smartest person in that way, where she's just essentially like vegging out, watching TV and eating food because the world around her is so incredibly stupid that she's gotten to this like almost what's the point stage of everything. And I that's just a fascinating way to look at intelligence, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting to look at that character in terms of what is her motivation, because she has basically become the person who is helping Homelander, who is a virulent white supremacist and soup supremacist, achieve his goals of world domination. And it comes across as kind of a cross between her putting her, you know, her intellectual curiosity to the test, and trying to see if she's right about the way she can manipulate things, and also, well, what else am I going to do?
Yeah,
you know,
she ends up being a double agent by the end of this. I think there's a possibility that might end up coming into play.
Well, I mean, we're certainly seeing some double agency come into play so far, because it looks like A-Train is starting to come around. And we've seen some very slowly over the course of, again, 3.5 seasons of the show, where this character has gone from being just another uncaring soup who thinks he's better than everything to looking at things and thinking, this is not right, and I can do something about it.
I don't know the name of the actor, which is unfortunate, but I did want to say he really does bring a humanity and like a likability to that role. And to see his evolution, it seems like viable. Like it seems like it really works for that character. I don't know how it would for some of the others, but there has been dissension in The Seven ever since season one with different characters. But like you said, with A-Train, it's been slower and slower. And then this season, we're finally seeing him start to like collaborate, reluctantly at times with The Boys.
That would be Jesse T. Usher, just to give credit to where it's due. He is doing a great job in that role for sure. Everybody is just, you know, I think everybody in this show is just hitting on all four cylinders for sure. You know, the performances across the board are great. And we haven't even really talked about Anthony Starr as Homelander, Because it would be so easy for this character to just be a one-dimensional parody of both a parody of like a Superman, Captain America type superhero and a parody of a right-wing politician. And, you know, there's definitely some parody of certain right-wing politicians going on with this character. Don't get me wrong. But this character is so much more complicated and deep than that. And there are so many more layers to Homelander that Anthony brings out of this role, Anthony Starr.
I've said it before, and I really do think one of the most terrifying villains that's ever been depicted on screen, because he is unpredictable and he is infinitely powerful. So at any second, you can just see it in his eyes. At any second, he could break and just blow the world up. And it is like they handle that so well.
And you see it, especially in the course of this fourth episode, which was really, I think, one of the best episodes of the series so far, with what's going on with this character and him trying to overcome his humanity. Which is not a good thing to do.
No, that's a good
but
way of
you
putting
you
it,
also
though.
See some of why he is the way he is, and some of it, you know, some of it is the corporation's fault, and that's kind of the root of all of this. Is like, At the heart of this series, left and right, good and evil, bad and you know, whatever, it's all being manipulated by this corporation, and that's the root here. Like, Vought is really the central power, and whether
it's so
you know
funny.
It's propping up politicians
Disney.
On the left or the right, or it's propping up characters that are on the left or the right, characters that we think of as good or bad, their hands are in everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's
Disney
the greater commentary.
The scapegoat for all of this. Meanwhile, Amazon is producing this show that's like so anti-corporation. And it's like so funny to me because it's shining a spotlight on the fact that Vought is Disney. Meanwhile, Jeff Bezos over here is like one of the second richest man in the world, gets to just kind of like reap the reward of that for whatever. I mean, that's all subtext, outside of the show and stuff. But
I think that Vought is every corporation. I don't think it's just Disney. I think it's got elements of Disney, but I think it's got elements of Amazon too. And I will give credit to Amazon to allowing something like that to exist on its platform.
Yeah. It reminds me of when Disney did Dumbo, but that's a whole other conversation also. But, we see Starlight, some layers of her getting revealed this season that maybe shade a little bit more gray into this character that we've seen as morally righteous pretty much through the entire thing. And what I don't really like about that is the fact that it's new information that was never presented to us before. They just kind of decided to add it in this late in the game and us just be like, oh, okay, I guess that's the thing that happened.
Well, I mean, I think that in this universe, it's very fair to say that there is nobody that's completely good and there's nobody that's completely bad.
Sure.
I mean, there are some people that are very close to being completely bad, don't get me wrong, and there are some people that are very close to being completely good. But I don't think that the things that are revealed about Starlight, despite the way that they're cast, are really anything that's all that bad. We get the revelation that, and we probably should have had a spoiler warning up here, but we'll put it up in particular about this. We get the revelation that the reason that Firecracker has it in for Starlight so bad in particular is that they were on the pageant circuit together when they were preteens. And Starlight spread some rumors about Firecracker, who was her rival, that basically destroyed her reputation and mm-hmm. got her kicked off the pageant circuit. At age 13, when kids are capricious and, you know, she's got a mother that's telling her she's got to be ruthless. And, you know, who of us doesn't regret something we did when we were 13?
Oh my God. I regret things that I did at 33. That's like tip of the iceberg stuff. And then it's also shown that she blinded one of the hostages in a saving gone wrong.
Yeah. Again, you know, at the very start of her career when she didn't have complete control of her powers and that sort of thing. I mean,
made a mistake.
Yeah. You know, these things, you know, it's, you know, if we're going to not look badly on Ryan for accidentally splattering his trainer, which I don't think we do, then I don't think we can look bad upon Starlight. But of course it's being manipulated to turn people against Starlight. because that's the goal here. I don't know. It's fascinating. And we there's so many other characters that we haven't even really been able to get on, into what's going on with Huey, you know, on the verge of losing his dad. And Frenchie is going through some terrible stuff right now. Kimiko is going through some terrible stuff right now. And of course, Butcher's on the verge of death.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's so much that's going on in these four episodes. But you know, I'm so absorbed too, and I can't wait for the rest of the season.
Same.
This series is just so, this is possibly the best thing on television right now.
I'm going to put it up there in the top five, probably top three. I think I'm enjoying House of the Dragon and this more than anything else on right now. So I guess that puts it in top two.
Yeah. And you know, the everything that you love about this show in terms of the dark humor and the over-the-top gore and violence and everything, all of that's still here, too. There's stuff that we just can't talk about on the radio, period.
A lot of it.
Yeah. This is definitely still not a show for kids. So do not by any means sit your child in front of this show. It's not meant for them. But really loving it. We'll be talking about it more as the series goes on. We are done for this week, though. We will see you next week. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.